Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why it's happening again?
Welcome to Mindshifters Radio with your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife Jeannie. Michael and Jeannie share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. They offer tools and support 5 days a week. They will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love. In Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. And now your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
To the brightness within you and the truth that is rooted within me.
Hi, and welcome to Mindshifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm your co-host, Jeannie Rice, and we welcome you to the show. Today is Wednesday, January the 22nd, 2014. And our call-in number is 646-200-4169. Press 1, and that puts you in queue to talk to us. And we would love to hear your comments and your questions, because then that makes this your show. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you, dear heart. It's an awesome day in Branson, Missouri. Cold, but still a pretty sunny day. And we are in appreciation for the fact that, well, one, that we get to live a human life. It's pretty awesome. And two, the fact that we get to share some time with you. We appreciate everyone who chooses to participate in the ancient work of forgiveness. And we are so blessed to have, or at least to be gathering an understanding of how this first century Aramaic process of forgiveness works. The fact that we now have available on planet Earth, it's been around for thousands of years, but it has been hidden. The fact that we now have the technology and the knowledge available to us, no thanks to modern science, but rather to the ancient Aramaic, for how to reach inside of this human organism and remove what never belonged, to take out of the structure the things that we've been hiding. In many cases, we've hidden from ourselves for generations. And so we have this awesome technology, and if you're not familiar with it, we invite you to go to our website, www.whyagain.org. That's whyagain.org. And in the upper left-hand corner is a link, and the link says Start Here. And when you click that link, you will see a set of instructions that starts to introduce you to how to move into the Aramaic forgiveness process. And what this does is it gives you a reliable, systematic way that if consistently and persistently used, you will remove literally from your structure, from your mind, from your emotions, from your body, the very capacity to experience any form of hostility or fear in any way, shape, or form. You will come to the point where no matter what happens in your world, you will be incapable of that. Now, those who are, and I speak for myself here in my memory and remembering, those who are filled with hostility and fear, those who rage at the drop of a hat, those who criticize, those who condemn, those who blame, those who are in continuous disturbance and turmoil over what they think is what's happening in their worlds, are in that state of turmoil because of what's inside of them. And it seems impossible to conceive of a world without that, because we've blamed the world for that. And, you know, kind of one of my favorite tongue-in-cheek lines is one that says, notice if you've been through a particular painful reality 87 different times with 42 different people, you are the only one that was there every time. The output of your mind, the output of your emotional body, the output of your physiology is all about you and the contents of your mind. And nobody told us that forgiveness was how to remove content. Literally, everywhere that you hear the word forgive, substitute the word remove. Now, the Greeks tell us that forgiveness is something I do to you. Which, of course, now when you realize that forgiveness is removal, it's ridiculous. I'm going to remove you. Do I have the right to do that? I'm going to remove myself. Let me remove you. That is, let me forgive you. And in the Greek mythology, in the Greek philosophy, and we've been fed Greek philosophy in place of Yeshua's teachings. So it goes like this in the Greek world. You did something really terrible that caused all this pain inside of me, but it's okay. I'm going to forgive you. I'm going to let you off the hook. Now with your new understanding, realizing that forgiveness means removal, would you say to someone, you did something really terrible that caused all this pain inside of me, and so now I'm going to remove you? Doesn't make any sense. So forgiveness isn't something you apply to them. Forgiveness is what you apply inside yourself to remove your capacity for any form of hostility or fear. And, you know, make no mistake about it. Hostility and fear are the energies of insanity and regret. You know, one of the first questions that Jeannie asks when she introduces the Why Is This Happening to Me Again workshop is, she asks, how many have ever held a newborn child? And then ask people to describe the essence of the newborn in a single word. And everybody who's held a newborn child, their descriptor for the child is something around, something connected to this awesome active presence of love. The words we get are beauty and purity and sweetness. We've had maybe over the last 45 years of doing this, three or four people who said, ooh, terrible. And then on further quizzing, what we find out is they had terrible inside of them about babies. It wasn't about the baby. It wasn't about the newborn. Everyone who taps into the newborn, it's this awesome presence of love. It's this sweetness. It's this purity. It's this innocence. It's human life. That is human life itself. The world specializes in ripping us off for our human lives. And the second question Jeannie asks, and the answer 100% of the time is the same. She asks, how many have ever done something they regret? And then asks everyone to go back to the moment where they did the behavior that they regret, and what were they feeling that motivated them to do that? 100% of the time, 100% of the people, in 100% of the cultures around the globe where we've asked that question, the answer is always some form of hostility or fear. What does that mean? That means that hostility or fear in a human mind makes us stupid. We do things we regret. Stop behaving out of your hostility or fear. Zip your lip. Shut your mouth. Don't say another word if you're in hostility or fear, or you're going to regret it. Stop. Learn that if an event in your life resonates your hostility or fear, the event in your life has not caused your hostility or fear. The event in your life has shown you your hostility or fear. So the events in your life not only can't be forgiven, but need no forgiveness. If you apply forgiveness properly, the things that life shows you, your hostility or fear, you will remove from your experience until you're done with it. Now, that's not going to happen overnight. You can ask anybody that gets on the show, when Dr. Tim gets on, when Michelle gets on, when Jeannie gets on, when I get on, if Julie answers, if Rex comes on, Mincy comes on. Everybody who's regularly on the show, if you say, well, you know, were you done with your work in a week? No, no. It's a lifetime of work. Just building the brain cells for how to do this work takes time. It takes energy. It takes internal work. Building the brain cells for understanding how to forgive. And that's what those instructions are on our website. And there are several audios, radio shows where we've walked somebody through the whole forgiveness process. So step by step by step, as you forgive, as you build the brain cells for how to remove content that never belonged. And whoever told you that that content could be removed? Nobody. Nobody's ever told us that. They've told us that we need to forgive everybody in our lives. And that's a fraud. Stop forgiving people. In fact, never forgive anyone ever again for anything, including yourself. And many people say, well, wait a minute, Michael, I thought you were a teacher of forgiveness. Here you're telling me never to forgive anybody. That's right. I am a teacher of forgiveness. Never forgive anybody because you can't. And it's just such a hard concept for people to get. Forgiveness isn't about letting other people off the hook. Remember, every time you use the word forgive, substitute the word remove. You don't remove other people. But if you apply forgiveness to your internal pain, trauma, fear, anger, rage, guilt, grief, or whatever, then you will be entering into a world where you will be removing those energies from your structure. Now, if you go back 2,000 years ago to the original teacher of this process, the man named Yeshua, the world calls him Jesus, but his name wasn't Jesus, it was Yeshua. The world thinks he was a religious teacher. He wasn't a religious teacher. He just taught how the whole energy system of life works, and here's how it works. He says, you must forgive from your heart. Now, substitute word removal. You must forgive from your heart the wrongs of your brother. You've got to remove from inside of you all of your pain or trauma that you're blaming everybody else for. And so substitute that word removal for forgiveness, and all of a sudden it gets cleared. Oh, I'm in sadness around what I think is this event, then I'm going to apply forgiveness and remove my sadness. I'm in fear about this event, I'm going to apply forgiveness and remove my fear. I'm in rage about this event, I'm going to apply forgiveness and remove my rage. I'm in grief about this, I'm going to apply forgiveness and remove my grief. Well, Michael, you mean that I could face some terrible event in my life and not experience grief over it? Yes, that's what I mean. Grief is an aberrant energy that does not belong in the human system. Well, Michael, what if somebody dies? Well, let me share a story. There's a woman in South Florida. Actually, she was in her 90s last year when we were down there and just passed away. But back when she was in her early 60s, she did a lot of my work in South Florida. And her parents were in their 90s. There was longevity in her family, and her parents were in their 90s. And one of the issues that we did, she actually worked with me for about 3 years on a private basis, one-on-one. And she came in one day just, you know, her father is ill. He's 90, I forget what, 92, 94, and getting ready to pass. But it's like the elephant in the room. Nobody's allowed to talk about the fact that dad's death is imminent. So she opens it up, and there's just great grief and loss and pain at the thought of her father dying. And she works through those issues. She forgives. She removes that pain and that grief. She goes home to her parents' home where the word death is not allowed, and she says the word. She has a conversation with her parents about his impending passing. And there is bedlam and rage and upset that she would dare bring this conversation forward. Having done her work, she was able to just be the space of love as her parents processed through this. The upshot was they were able to finally admit and acknowledge, yep, it's not going to be long, and dad's going to pass. And at 62 years of age, and when I think about her telling me this, I remember the words that she said. At 62 years of age, for the first time in her life, as a result of processing around her father's impending death, and he's 92 or 94, she hears the words come from his mouth, I love you. First time in 62 years she's heard the words. And when her father passed, she and her mother and her two children were in a circle around his bed, holding hands. One on one side, connected around to the other side. And they were there for his last breath and his passing. And she said it was one of the most beautiful and powerful family moments they had ever had. And she shared with me in the subsequent weeks that her relationship with her father was better after he passed than it had ever been when he was alive. We've made a lot of things up that in this eternal energy system are not appropriate. We've made up all kinds of stories based on limited and incorrect perception, based on hostility or fear, and we've created all kinds of drama and trauma, and drama and trauma in the true human energy system is not required. Hostility and fear are energies that defile perception and make us stupid. That's why we're inviting everybody to forgive, that is, remove all the things that make you stupid. And that's the bottom line and the essence of this work. That's what I'm here to learn, and I'm still learning it. I have a genetic history, some heavy-duty stuff back there, and I'm still peeling up layers and learning and moving through it. And if you begin to do this work, you will be doing it years from now. You know, when they asked this man, Yeshua, how many of these worksheets do we have to do? How many times do we have to do this removal process? And in essence, what we could say is, first of all, you can't go to a deeper depth and remove something that you don't have the vitality to remove. So imagine we've got a vitality meter. It goes from 1 to 10, and you're at level 5 vitality. If you have a level 7 toxin in there, toxic reality, you cannot access that level 7 toxic reality if you're at a level 5 vitality. And the reason for that is that this body-mind unit has a built-in suppress mechanism. If you don't have the vitality to handle it, the system's not going to yield it up, because literally to yield up those toxic energies could kill you if you don't have the vitality to process through them. So if you're at level 5 and you do your work and you get to a level 6, you're still not going to remove it. You get to a level 7, you're still not going to remove it. You get to a level 7.5 and what happens? All hell breaks loose. You get to reach into that new depth. So you're going to go through layers and levels of cleaning up your genetics, cleaning up your history, until you're done with hostility or fear, until you've removed all hostility and fear from your structure, until you've forgiven all hostility or fear. Then you'll stand in front of the event that yesterday would have looked so traumatic, and you'll realize it was not the event, it was the content of your mind that was traumatic. It's a process. It's an exciting process. Nothing else that I know of like it on the planet. And we're just delighted that you're here to share moving forward and understanding that process with us. And so we welcome you today. And Jeannie, is Dr. Tim with us today?
He is, and he's on.
Awesome. How do you be, sir? How did the support group go last night?
It went beautifully. We had 12 people there, and we gave some options and decided to, we handed out copies of your Kabor's manuscript translations for the Beatitudes and the summary of Yayam's translations, the new offerings that he has, and we listened to the second of two CDs that Dale Allen Hoffman has on it, which runs about an hour and 15 minutes and covers the third through the seventh, but several times he comes back and brings in the first, second, and third. So it was a wonderful, an intense, a very powerful energy to be in for an hour and 20 minutes, and that gave rise to lots of good questions and discussion, and that prompted somebody to offer to do a very intense worksheet.
Aha.
And the group supported that person in doing this very intense worksheet, which, of course, is, happens without fail. It stirs up thoughts and energies and responses for everybody else in the group. And
everybody gets a chance at removal.
Everybody had some stuff to remove, and everybody did some removing. And one of the key concepts that has come up for discussion several times in the past few weeks is the idea of the lack of duality, how everything is God, God is everything, and yet we've created this, a language that talks about evil and darkness and right and wrong and judgment and good against evil and us against them. And in the teachings from your work through Guy Finley and Way of Mastery and Dale Allen Hoffman, the idea is put forth that from the ancient Aramaic and probably even before that, there was a knowledge that everything is connected. There is no absolute separation in the truest sense of that word, except for what exists in the mind energy that's created that develops an illusion or a hallucination of separation. And so in the ancient Aramaic, when they talked about darkness, they were referring to thoughts or conclusions that would generate hostility or fear. And in the work that Dale Allen Hoffman puts out, he talks about, and in the ancient Aramaic, you say at different times, you talk about how there's this quote from the Bible that says, "The eye is the lamp of the soul. If the light for you is darkness, how deep will your darkness become?" And in the ancient Aramaic, it says something more like, your perceptual mind is the light for your earthly life. It's meant to help you navigate in the physical realm. And if the light for you is darkness, hostility, or fear, then you're not going to see things accurately, and you're going to deny and suppress things and turn away from things that you need to be able to look at. Well, if the light is your perceptual reality, then turn your perception towards those things that you're afraid to look at, and they are no longer dark. They are lightened. And you can't chase or shovel or hack the darkness out of a room. You simply get rid of the darkness by turning on the light. So you can't cut off or deny and suppress your way out of your anger or fear or sadness or bad memories. You simply have to turn your focus there and hold your attention on your loving energy and your true nature as love as you focus on those things that you have been denying and suppressing, and they will be transmuted into the energy. They will be integrated into your experience, and there won't be darkness anymore. So this discussion, coming right on the heels of Dale's very nice clarification in several different ways in that hour and 15-minute talk, I think really helps some people grab the idea differently, that there isn't an evil being out there trying to suck us into damnation and hellfire and cheat us out of our inheritance as loving beings and being one with the Creator. It's only a process of our own thought that holds a false conclusion and then generates fear and has us turn away from parts of ourself and parts of our own thought. And in that turning away, we take our attention and our awareness, our light, off of those things, and we create our own darkness.
Yeah, the old demonology game's a great distraction.
Yeah, and that's not a bad thing. It's just a thing. And we create our own darkness, and we're not creating a monster. We're simply creating something that we're refusing to look at. And if we turn and make the choice to turn and look at it, we've eliminated the monster.
I love the way the Course says it. The Course in Miracles says, bring the world you do not want to the one that you do. when we bring our hidden darkness, our hostility, our fear, our generational pain and trauma to the active presence of light and love, it dissolves. It just, you know, there's nothing of all the crazy stuff that non-humans have made up, those who don't have a human life, the active presence of love in them, none of it can stand and stay integrated in the presence of the Creator's mind. And our ability to actively presence love is the ability to actively presence the Creator's mind in us. And from there, everything we're willing to uncover, bring forward, just dissolves. It just dissolves, dissolves, disappears. It's like a shadow in the night, as you say, when the lights come on. You know, nobody's ever invented a flash dark. It turned on, it puts on all the out all the light, because darkness is an absence. It is not a presence. So it sounds like it was an awesome evening.
It was absolutely intense and delightful.
Cool. And for those who are listening to the show, if you want to learn more about the Beatitudes, of course, they're on the website. And we do cover it in the video, the Beatitudes in the video, Empowered to Heal. And the key word to me in the Beatitudes is the word that in the Greek translations is totally misinterpreted to be blessed are they, as though there's some sort of an external blessing that's going to come to us, somebody or something is going to bless us if we just, you know, obey. Where when you look at the Aramaic Beatitudes, the first word in each of the Beatitudes has been translated as blessed are they. It's a three-part word, tuvehun. And it speaks of literally a latent neural structure in us that the Creator put in us to guide us to happiness and well-being. And that if you follow the instructions in the Beatitudes and instruction sets, if you follow the instructions there in the Beatitudes, then you will activate that neural structure. And as you activate it, it becomes your guide in life. And hey, when you're guided by what the Creator set in front of you, problems disappear. It's handled. And if it hasn't, if the problems haven't disappeared and it's not handled, then you know that there's a part of you that's still hanging out in darkness. Okay, so that's my next worksheet. That's my next piece of work to do until fully activated is this guidance system that the Creator put in us. And an accompaniment of that will be that every cell in your structure will sing out with love. It will just be the most awesome thing. You won't, you know, I hear so many people as I travel around the globe, you know, say, well, you know, what's the point? Why are we doing this loveless slog through the world, the pain, the trauma, the insanity going, why are we doing this? And it's like, well, you're doing it because what's inside of you is that loveless slog and the pain and the sadness and the fear. Apply forgiveness, you'll be done with it, and what you'll find is, it's just an absolutely delightful journey. And along the way, there'll be opportunities. And the opportunities will accurately reflect the content of your mind that glosses over the neural structure. This is specifically in that word tuvehun, it speaks of a latent or an unconscious neural structure, something that's been made unconscious because we've put layers of garbage over it. We've hidden it from ourselves. And so the Beatitudes are the how to get back to accessing it. So that's awesome. I appreciate what you're doing there in Chicago and the people you're supporting and the space you're holding and the space you hold for us. It's awesome.
Well, thank you. It's my privilege, and as I tell people, that support group on Tuesdays is the highlight of my week each week. And it is just a blessing, and it blesses me many times over to participate in that.
Cool. Well, there are lots of things to participate in. Jeannie and I are going to be in Costa Rica, March the 7th to the 15th, doing a Why Is This Happening to Me Codependence Intensive. So if anybody wants to get away from that winter stuff, March 7th to 15th, come join us in Costa Rica. We're doing a 9-day residential intensive. Included in the cost of the intensive is food, accommodations, workshop materials. Everything's totally and completely included. So we'd be delighted to have you with us. And let's see, what else is happening? We're going to be doing a Food Fund Forgiveness and Work project in July the 7th to the 16th, I believe it is. We'll be doing Food Fund Forgiveness and Work. And so if you care to join us, we'd be delighted to have you with us. And the schedule for the summer is on the website. We are looking at making some changes and adaptations of it, but that's not complete yet. It will be changing somewhat, but if there's an intensive there that you are interested in participating in, let us know so that we'll make sure that's not one of the ones that we change. So, because we are going to change things around and head to Michigan earlier rather than later. We said we're going to shorten the summer a little bit so that we can get up to Chicago and up to Michigan sooner rather than later. And we'll probably be doing, I'm not sure yet which it will be, but a 9-day intensive up in Michigan while we're there. So, and that'll probably be in October sometime. So we'll see how all that develops and how it all comes together. And I do need to talk to you, Dr. Tim, more about getting to Unity up there in Crystal Lake in Woodstock. So
you did hear from Reverend Tom?
I have not heard from Reverend Tom, though.
Okay, well, he has sent another email, and I will make sure we resend that.
Okay. Cool. If you would, I'll be looking at it today. Say it again.
He was asking me about that again last week.
Ah, okay. Well, we'll get on it before we get on the road here next Saturday and get that all set up and scheduled. So we'll get back with y'all on it and get it set up. In the meantime, Jeannie, is there anything happening in the chat room for us to be aware of? Any conversation, questions, thoughts, answers, ideas? And or is there anybody in the phone queue with a hand up? Our caller number, of course, is 646-200-4169. We'd love to hear your sweet voice.
We actually have two people with their hand up. So the first one is area code 517. That's probably Rex.
Hi, Michael. Hi, Jeannie. Hi, Dr. Tim. Hi, everyone. It is Rex.
Hey, Rex. Welcome.
Thank you.
How did it go in Ionia yesterday?
It went really well, actually. We were pleasantly surprised by having almost the same numbers that we had when we, with our last session, which was, as of yesterday, 33 days ago. And so there was quite a there was a lot of thoughts. Michelle and I had talked about it and whether or not we were going to have a drop-off, because traditionally we'd had a drop-off every time we had a break in the times. But just the opposite seemed to happen. Level 4 group, our first session was a little bit smaller, but not too much. We had about 17. And in the second session, I think we had somewhere between 23 and 27. Michelle and I both neglected to count, which sometimes happens. But it went really well. We had good sessions. We're moving through the laws of living, and the guys seem to really be interacting and doing a lot of really good work with the process, and many of them are doing the exercises. Oh, I'd say probably what I got was maybe 10 or 15 out of the group are doing the 5 to 1 and 8 p.m. exercises of presencing love and extending that outward in the prison and also to everyone on the planet. So I asked how many were doing it, and what I've done is just encourage them to be honest. And then I make jokes about how they can, you know, what they go through when they're trying to tell me whether or not they did their work or not, which is kind of fun. It's actually, yesterday was an enjoyable time. We laughed a lot, especially in the second group, which was level 2. There was just a lot of laughter and cutting up, and also moving through issues that are surfacing. We had one inmate. Many of them replied to Michelle and I both, and openly in the group, how much they were glad we were back, and they missed us, and they missed the work, and one inmate specifically had been doing, he's involved in legal process. He really enjoys the process of rules, we call laws, but they're actually rules that man has made. And he enjoys studying law in that format. And so he was talking about that, and he said he's just feeling so different and acting so different, behaving so differently to the people in the prison, the guards and the prisoners, other prisoners as well, but the guards and the staff that he's exposed to. You know, I guess he talks to quite a few people, and he's seen as being a troublemaker because he liked really fighting against the system. And so
he uses illegal paperwork and process to harass them. Is that what I'm understanding?
It's the image I got from what his communication was. And I had the experience a little bit with him in the class initially, but it just got diffused so nicely by the divine, you know, by divinity. And it just got diffused so nicely that he just didn't do it anymore. And he did some healing when that came up one time. And this is the same gentleman that I brought up, the person who got up and left the area that he was sitting in the church, in the chapel, and then moved up to the front and huffed when he did it. And I paused and said, it looks like you may have gotten triggered by something. Would you mind sharing? And he opened up and shared it. He did some forgiveness, some releasing of that thought about those guys talking while I was talking. He couldn't hear me. And he just, and ever since, he sat right up front. But that was an opening, and that happened a couple months ago. And he was the one sharing, and he was really open with talking about how the experience is really, he is changing, and this was his wording, and I brought this out too because it was just huge. His wording was, I am changing so much because of what you have given me as what both of you, it wasn't Rex, it was Michelle and Rex, what you have brought into this, into my awareness that we can, that I can use, that we can use, and I'm changing. And then he gave examples. One of them was the warden skipper approached him in one of their meetings and said he was being real quiet and he just didn't have an issue. You know, he was just feeling love. You know, he was feeling present. And the skipper came up to him and he goes, okay, what's going on? And he said, warden skipper, what do you mean, what's going on? He goes, I see you're being really quiet. I know you got something going on. Because and as he pursued the conversation, he said that the skipper had an expectation of him having problems. And he didn't have any. And he was comfortable. And he didn't need to bring any issues up right then about anything. And he was okay. And three times the skipper sought him out to bring that out of him. And it was just really cool to hear him talk about how excited he was that he just didn't have anything in that moment for the skipper, and the skipper finally just went, wow, okay, cool, well, good, and then he just walked away, you know, and there was no conflict, and he said that's really changing as a result of him doing the work, which is just wonderful to hear, and I brought that out, and I said, you know, any of us can offer tools and can share ideas, but it's about using them and doing the inner work and the process that caused it to change. And he and many other of the inmates were acknowledging that they are making changes and they're seeing things differently. And another really highlight for me was we were working through the second lesson, and we were on the purpose exercise. For those of you that don't know, Michael offers a purpose exercise, or secondary and a primary purpose. And our primary purpose is to develop a viable conscious spiritual body. And I was explaining that and talking about it from my perspective and my own commitment to myself and to that process in me. And I was sharing it with them, and I was so moved by the acknowledgement of the group as a whole. And I'm going to say there were probably, I especially noticed it in the second group, but it happened in the first group, but more in the second group, at least to my awareness. I had probably out of the 25, I'm going to say there may have been 15 that actually was not in their head, and I could just sense this I look in their eyes and I could see this light going off in their eyes, or it was already there and I was recognizing it or whatever. But it was just, it was awesome. And I almost, in that moment, I had actually paused. And, you know, I just do that anyway when I'm speaking, but I paused and said, I just acknowledge all of you for how awesome you're doing, the work you're doing, you know, and how you're making major changes. So that's just an overview of some of the highlights. And I did have one other thing, Michael and Dr. Tim, I'd like to share that was in relationship to the conversation we were having today, or you were having, and I was privy to and listening to, about evil. Would that be okay?
Yeah, please.
Okay. Let me real quick pull it out. I've got it in my notes here. Oh, you know what? I gave it to Michelle to... make a copy of.
Michelle's online.
I think, Michelle, did I give that to you?
Is this a thing on Einstein and evil that you're thinking of?
Yes. Do you have it there available?
I think so.
I'm not in front of my computer. I could pull it up.
Well, I do have that, Rex, and just while you guys are looking for it, I wanted to add a couple of things to the highlights.
Awesome.
So Rex was mentioning the gentleman who had moved to the front and had really noticed because Skipper had given him some feedback about the changes. I got
Skipper's the warden.
Yes. So... I got the sense that one of the most insightful things he experienced as far as feedback over the last 4 weeks was that his therapist had approached him because after a weekend and how he normally behaves, he usually ends up in the hole. And when she came to the work after the weekend, he was out and about and in the community and, you know, smiling and very pleasant. And she approached him and shared with him that she lost a bet to a coworker because she had anticipated that he would have ended up in the hole again over the weekend. And so when she told him that, I think, you know, he was like, my God, like, people's perceptions of me is such and such, and I'm noticing these shifts and feeling these shifts and behaving these shifts, and they don't see me the way I am now because they, you know, as evidenced by the lost bet. So I thought that was a pretty powerful share that he brought up.
Yes, thank you for reminding me.
That's pretty cool.
It is very cool. And I do have that up now. Unless you have something else, Michelle, I do have that,
Michael,
so I can read it.
Well, the other thing, Michael, that I thought was really cool was in the morning group, the level fours, there's one gentleman who's particularly invested. As a matter of fact, we provided him a brand new composition book because he went through the 100 pages in the month we were gone. And so his... it really was. And his disclosure was that he's been practicing the word links and writing those faithfully and could not believe in himself the shift in where he recognized he wasn't reacting to situations and circumstances in the, you know, community that he previously would have been triggered and engaged in. And, you know, some strong feelings around. And he was like, you know, these things are happening and I'm just kind of, they're just falling off. I'm not triggered. I'm not, you know what I mean? I can get a sense that the word links, I'm holding them, I'm internalizing them, and I'm being them now. And I thought that was, like, pretty validating for as far as a tool goes from the law of the living.
Well, to me, the fact that, you know, earlier in the show, I talked about how the person who lives in an hostility and fear-based mind can't fathom how they could possibly live and not have that as their continuous companion until they start doing their work. And I would think that the fact that he was able to share that with all these other guys, and by the way, for anybody who doesn't know what we're talking about here, this is a program that Rex and Michelle were doing with the help of some other folks in the Ionia prison, which is a high security prison where they bring all the so-called worst behavior problems. It's a behavior discipline prison in Michigan. And I think the average or the minimum for anybody that's in there is 25 years to life. So we're dealing with some pretty heavy-duty stuff. So, pardon me. Just to hear and to see that this guy is able to share this in front of everybody else, that's like such powerful modeling that anybody else who hasn't gotten it yet who's sitting there goes, yeah, I noticed that in you. You're not doing that rage thing anymore. You're not doing that sarcasm thing anymore. And it's just like it's a huge opening. And it takes me back to the Aramaic where the first coming of the Christ, which is the mind of love, is external. We see someone who does it, and most people hook that to Yeshua, and the word Christ is the name of an office in Aramaic. It's not the name of a man. And then the second coming was the personal, and where somebody sees someone doing something that they go, wow, you mean that's actually possible? To me, that's like, in this situation, that's the first coming of the Christ. And the second is when I do it myself. And so what awesome, awesome results you're getting. That's just so cool.
No, the class definitely continued, even in our absence. And that was what was most powerful for me personally. Like, wow, this class has just kept on humming. Even though we haven't been here, they're digging in and doing the work. And Michael, I think your point is well taken, because the overall flavor, like Rex mentioned, was that they were sharing their disclosures. And there was actually a couple different times where Rex was able to coach the person in the now moment in terms of them being stuck on, you know, some regulatory speech or what have you. And so it was very experiential. And there was one guy in particular, you almost could feel the heat, where he was kind of like, he was talking about the mind goal management tool where, you know, I'm setting my goals for the day, and then they got locked down, and like, you know, what the heck, I can't do my goals, so like, screw it, I'm not playing this game because I keep getting thwarted. And he was really on it when he first shared about his frustration. And then, you know, as Rex talked to him and we worked it through and kind of challenged some of his beliefs, the next thing you know, Rex was like, you could see the light bulb. Like, he was just like, he got it. And he became real quiet. And you can tell it just had settled in. And he really could see how it brought up his stuff. And then and the other guys in the audience were coaching him, saying, hey, man, have a goal to have a goal. And if you can't do that goal, then you get another goal. And, you know, they took over for us. It was fabulous.
Michelle, it's so awesome to have you on the team. I so appreciate you because, you know, when I'm teaching and I'm sharing this, quite often I don't catch all that. You know, I mean, we talked about it, and I see it and I experience it in the moment. But thank you so much for being the observer and you seeing all that and seeing the interactions and viewing it from an objective view and then reporting on it. I just really appreciate that. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I agree. Together, you know, we you know, captured it all. I'm like, oh, but what about that? Because, you know, there's so many exciting parts. It's hard to keep track of them all. We both left real high.
And Michelle, you also are more all the time interacting and interjecting, which I appreciate, which I get every opportunity I get. I hand you the microphone, as you know, and then you hand it back.
Exactly.
But I do what I – yes, I do appreciate that. And I would like to read this if I could, Michael. Would that be okay? Can't hear you. You might be muted.
Oh, excuse me. I had my mute button on. Is this thing on Evil and Einstein that I sent you a few months ago?
Yes.
Yeah, cool. Great. It's perfect. It's beautiful.
Okay. I had a one of the inmates actually, we got into a discussion about did God create evil? or the horrible things that happen on the planet, because God creates everything. So I had a conversation with Michael, and then about 3 days later, he sent me this email, and this is what it is, and I'll read it to you. And the question is, did God create evil? A university professor at a well-known institution of higher learning challenged his students with this question. Did God create everything that exists? A student bravely replied, yes, of course. God created everything, professor asked. Yes, sir, most certainly, the student replied. The professor answered, if God created everything, then God created evil. And since evil exists, and according to the principle that our works define who we are, then we can assume that God is evil. The student became quiet and did not respond to the professor's hypothetical definition. The professor, quite pleased with himself, boasted to the student that he had once more proven that faith was just a myth. Another student raised his hand and said, to a question, professor. Of course, replied the professor. The student stood up and asked, professor, does cold exist? Well, what kind of question is this? Of course cold exists. Haven't you ever been cold? The other student snickered at the young man's question. The young man replied, in fact, sir, cold does not exist. According to the law of physics, what we consider cold is in reality the absence of heat. Every body or object is susceptible to study when it has or transmits energy. And heat is what makes a body or matter have or transmit energy. Absolute zero, minus 460 degrees Fahrenheit, is the total absence of heat. And all matter becomes inert and incapable of reaction at that temperature. Cold does not exist. We have created this word to describe how we feel if we have no heat. Professor, does darkness exist? The professor responded, of course it does. The student replied, once again, you are wrong, sir. Darkness does not exist either. Darkness is in reality the absence of light. Light we can study, but not darkness. In fact, we can use Newton's prism to break white light into many colors and study the various wavelengths of each color. You cannot measure darkness. A simple ray of light can break into a world of darkness and illuminate it. My screen just went blank because I hadn't moved it for a while. How can you know how dark a certain space is? You measure the amount of light present. Isn't this correct? Darkness is a term used by man to describe what happens when there is no light present. Finally, the young man asked the professor, sir, does evil exist? Now uncertain, the professor responded, of course. As I have already said, we see it every day. It is in the daily examples of man's inhumanity to man. It is in the multitudes of crime and violence everywhere in the world. These manifestations are nothing but evil. To this, the student replied, evil does not exist, sir, or at least it does not exist unto itself. Evil is simply the absence of love. It is just like darkness and cold, a word that man has created to describe the absence of love. The Creator did not create evil. Evil is the result of what happens when man does not have the experience of love's presence in his physiology. It's like the cold that comes when there is no heat, or the darkness that comes when there is no light. The professor sat down. The young man's name, Albert Einstein. A true story. It's such a moving expression. And yesterday when I shared it, I let them know that we weren't going to get into a discussion today about it. I just asked them to be with it and contemplate what the meaning of this is. And then from there we went into the 5-minute devotion, which they all did with us in the afternoon group, which is another really cool thing to see happen. So I know there was another caller, and I'm just going to I have a commitment that I'm going to have to leave real shortly. I might be able to listen to the rest of the program, but my love and my blessings to everyone for all the love and support that you offer us for the work we're doing and offer the inmates, and they are doing it with us. And keep them in your prayers, in your mind, in your petitions to God, and just keep up the great work. We're doing great stuff. Thank you so much, everyone. Blessings, Michael and Tim and everyone else.
Thanks, Rex. Okay, we do have another caller. We did have Dora on the line, and this is Wednesday, so I'm sure she was calling for Unstuck Wednesday. But she has had to hang up apparently. So our other caller, we've got about 4 minutes, is area code 813. You're on the air. Who do we have and where are you calling from?
Hi, this is Tim calling from Tampa.
Michael, we're not hearing your phone.
Okay, excuse me. I was saying hi, Tim. Welcome, and how can we support you today?
Oh, great. Hi, thank you. I have a change I've been trying to make for years in my life, and kind of a positive change, something I really want to do, and it involves quitting my job, and I think I can do it financially. There should be no problem there. I just can't seem to get myself to do it. I wondered if Workbeat or something would help me get over that and do it.
Well, my input would be that are you familiar with the reality management worksheet that we have?
Yes, I haven't done it.
Okay. So the area that you're wanting to make a change, but you know, one of the things we see in this work is that basically the way that you create a stress in your life is by setting a goal. So it sounds like you've set a goal.
Right.
And then the functioning purpose of the mind is to give you behavior prompts with which to achieve that goal. If the behavior prompts aren't strong enough and or you're not doing them, it's probably because you have a conflicting goal. And so I'd suggest digging out the worksheet and start doing some worksheets around whatever those conflicting goals are so that you clear out whatever creates the behavior prompt that inhibits you from making this change, this positive change that you want to make. So that would be the starting point that I would offer. And then the other place I would go, I don't know if you have any of our DVDs, but there's a DVD called On Creating Consciously. And that one might be supportive of you in being able to make that shift. And, of course, we hold the space and are here to, you know, if you dig in and do some worksheets in that arena and run into any blocks, we're happy to be here to support you and love to hear from you to help clarify the principles.
Okay, thank you. What's a behavior prompt? So
I set a goal, you know, I'm thirsty, I set a goal to drink. My mind prompts me to do a behavior. I reach my hand out, I pour a glass of water, and I drink. So the functioning purpose of the mind is to prompt us out of whatever content it has to do a behavior. If I'm hungry, I create dinner. I do a behavior. My mind doesn't say, I'm hungry, I'll just drink water. My mind says, oh, let's create some food. So every behavior that's done is in response to a stress. So it sounds like you've probably got conflicting stresses. And, of course, the forgiveness process is about canceling goals, which reduces the conflicting stress and will tend to support you and empower you to do the primary goal, the thing that you say you want to do in terms of making that change. But there are underlying things that you're not in touch with, and the worksheet, I think, will help you to get in touch with those.
Got it. Okay. I'll check it out.
All right, and I'd appreciate if you keep us posted on how it goes. And we're down to just a few seconds, so we're going to have to close the show out. We certainly appreciate everybody being with us, and we invite you to give the best gift you can possibly give to the world, and that is have the best year yet of your eternal life. Blessings.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie, who present the internal Aramaic process of forgiveness. Michael and Jeannie are here every Monday through Friday on Earth Angels Radio. For more on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.yagain.com. That's www.yagain.com. whyagain.com.